You are listening to The Book Judge, a podcast about books that you should read if you're interested in business. I'm your host, Conrad Chua. This is a curated reading list to give you a better grip on how to approach the complex issues that businesses face. I'm recording this at the end of the year, and boy, has 2020 been some year. There's been, what, a global pandemic, a work-from-home revolution, and with 2 weeks left, there's still time for Brexit and Trump to leave their marks on the year. This is also the time when websites release their top 20 lists or recollection of the year. For The Book Judge, I'm doing something different. I'm choosing a book that looks at what the next decade might bring. The book is 2030 by Mauro Guillen. I strongly believe that this is the perfect time to read this book. 2020 has thrown so many curveballs at us that many people are just hoping for that return to, well, whatever life was in December 2019. But that'd be a huge mistake. The pandemic has accelerated trends that were brewing under the surface. Societies, companies, and us individuals will have to make stark choices that before the pandemic was easy to kick the can down the road. The biggest challenge that Guillen identifies will be the impact of changing demographics. Most of the developed world has been facing a baby drought. For every baby born in the developed world, more than 9 are being born in emerging markets or the developing world. Advances in healthcare also mean that babies born in the developing world have a better chance of making it to adulthood. Many developed economies will see a drop in population unless they encourage more immigration, something that most societies can't accept at the moment. This means making tough choices. How will rich, developed countries address the intergenerational question of who should pay for an increasingly elderly population? What are the geopolitical implications of a world where Africa becomes a lot more populous? And China has the world's largest middle-class population. Governments have a terrible record when it comes to managing population demographics. China's one-child policy in the 1970s has resulted in the most rapidly aging society that the world has ever seen. Chinese preferences for baby boys, coupled with that great rural-urban migration, mean that much of rural China is just locked in this stasis. You see elderly parents looked after by their sole son who can't afford to leave them to work in the cities. Singapore, where I'm from, has tried all kinds of ways to encourage families to have more children because the country's total fertility rate has gone below what is replacement. None of these measures have worked, and all of them are expensive. The main driver behind all this is the better economic situation for women, which is a great thing. Every society sees women having children later and fewer children when they do, as their economic prospects improve. And I love this trend. Every positive development indicator stems from improving the economic situation of women. Guillen does not talk about this in the book, but there are many people, especially in developed countries, who feel that a small population is just fine. They hanker for this return to some distant past where there were just fewer people to compete for jobs or education places, and they use this to justify curbs on immigration. You see this feeling surface in the Brexit debates or Trump's Make America Great Again. Guillen does make the well-known economic case for immigration, but as an immigrant myself, I can say that these arguments just don't wash on anyone who's already has reservations about immigration. I've benefited tremendously from globalization, and I find it terribly sad that no one has yet to translate the facts, data, and immigrant stories into a case that can persuade the large electorates. Guillen sounds the alarm to aging societies that they'll need to make some hard choices with regards to how you finance healthcare and financial support mechanisms. But there are also possibilities. Frankly, I'm not so excited about the prospect of the developed world reorientating half its economy to become some giant care home. Guillen does write extensively about the economic opportunities from catering to the leisure needs of the elderly, But at the moment, in the midst of a global pandemic, it's really hard to imagine the elderly going back on cruise ships or package tours. But who knows, maybe there'll be other types of leisure activities in the next 10 years for the elderly. One of Guillen's forecasts that hits home personally for me is the idea that seniors will embrace learning and entrepreneurship. At the moment, business education is geared towards people aged between 18 and 32. Executive MBAs might take in older working students on a part-time basis, but there's really only a handful of degree programs that cater to much older students who want to take a full-time business course. I was fortunate to enroll in the Sloan's program at LBS in the early noughties, and we get people in their 50s coming back to school for a year to learn how to take that different step in their careers. It was a small class, but I can definitely see more demand for this in the next few years. This is the part of the podcast where I place a spotlight on one part of the book that you can use immediately in your business or in an interview or just to impress your business school friends. I call this the Did You Know section. Guillen sees a world grappling with the effects of climate change in 2030. Increasingly, cities will play a huge role in determining if the world can arrest the effects of climate change. 55% of the world's population live in cities, which occupy only 1% of the world's land. This extreme crowding means that the concrete and asphalt in cities contribute disproportionately to global warming. Cities account for 75% of global energy consumption and 80% of global carbon emissions. I majored in economics many years ago, and I still have those economics instincts. So it was quite a shock to hear in this book how in many cities, small actions that change habits have a much greater impact on reducing carbon emissions than blunt market-based approaches. Of course, as an economist, I favor things like fines, taxes, or incentives. Guillen suggests two lateral principles of thinking to approach this. The first principle is what he calls the mundanity of excellence. This idea that excellence comes about as a result of consistent, small improvements rather than huge quantum leaps. It's an idea that you see in elite sporting teams and athletes and artisans. The Team GB cycling team, which had so much success in the Olympics and the Tour de France, used to call this marginal gains. The second principle is nudging. This is where behavioral change can come about through a different user interface or a different way in which choices are presented. If you think humans are too smart to be nudged, I encourage you to watch the show The Social Dilemma on Netflix. That shows you how social media companies can use everything from the color of the screen to the placement of buttons to get you to click on something. Guillen believes that technology can amplify the impact of these two principles in major cities. So a thermostat like Google Nest could display how much your heating can actually cost you instead of just the temperature. They could time traffic lights to optimize that to reduce carbon emissions from cars. I think, as in many things, adoption will be uneven. And I can see cities in Asia, such as Singapore, adapting such technology with these principles a lot faster than older cities in the developed world. Unfortunately, many citizens there have a more suspicious attitude towards technology. But on the other hand, people in the developed world have also started to give over large parts of their lives to algorithms. Think about the algorithmic feeds of social media. So, there might be hope yet. It's always tempting when reading books about the future to think in terms of forecasts and where the author get it right or wrong. I don't think that's the right lens. Years ago, when I was working in the Singapore Civil Service, we adopted the scenario planning approach, first popularized in Shell. And we were very clear that these were not forecasts, but plausible stories of different futures that we needed to prepare for. The last chapter of 2030 talks about some ways for you to think about these plausible futures. Guillen has 7 principles, and in that style favored by many business writers, most of them are in 3-word bites like diversify with purpose, take the current, or anticipate dead ends. You'll have to read the book to learn about all these principles, but I'll choose the one that resonated with me the most during these times. Number 5 on Guillen's list is approach uncertainty with optimism. He talks about how most people freeze up when confronted with unexpected events. You see this in everything from elite athletes to global organizations. And in some situations, people are more susceptible to the loss aversion bias, where you're more worried about losing what you have, to the point where you'll only move forward if you can be guaranteed a huge gain. This is very useful advice as we stumble through the pandemic. It's natural for people to wish for a return to the world that was present in 2019. But the reality is that it won't be coming back. Companies, industries, and jobs will be decimated, and there'll be very real economic and social pain. But if we get too fixated by these downsides, we're going to get stuck in a rut. In fact, we'll be stuck in 2020. Companies have to make tough decisions about what to do with all their assets that might never be used fully again, whether that be cruise ships, physical shops, or offices. Individuals will also have to make tough decisions. Everything from, should you relocate from cities to suburbs now that you don't have to commute every day? Should you move to a country or region that's better equipped to ride the waves that the book 2030 talks about? Or should you change your jobs? Should you learn new skills that will be more valuable in these times? None of these are easy decisions, but you have to be careful not to fall into that loss aversion cognitive trap, and you've got to face these uncertainties with optimism. For every book I introduce, I have this segment called the author question. One question that I could ask the author. Many books that talk about the future focus on the impact of demographics because, that's the best leading indicator for societies. I mean, you already know how many adults there'll be in a country just by looking at the population data now. But I also worry about assuming demographics is destiny. Whether we like it or not, governments and the quality of the public sector play a huge role in determining if a country with a growing population can take off the way China has, or whether it languishes like India. So my question to Mauro Guillen is this: what are the main things that governments could do in places with a growing young population, such as Africa? What can they do to ride that demographic wave? I'll tweet that question to Mauro and share his reply. That's all for this episode of The Book Judge. If you like what you hear, I want to ask one favor. Just tell one other person about this show and encourage them to listen. You and they can subscribe to this podcast through Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And that now includes Amazon Music. So if you have an Alexa, you can listen to this podcast with your smart speaker. While you're there, leave a rating. It helps others discover the show. If you have comments, you can tweet me at ConradChua16, Chua spelled C-H-U-A. Till next time, this is your book judge, Conrad Chua.